Our next speaker is Paul Flickema from Northern Arizona University. It's not just wireless networked cyber infrastructure for sensing, inference, and control of soil moisture. And Paul, you have 20 minutes, and I'll give you a five-minute warning.
First, I'd like to thank Andrew and the organizers for inviting me to come and give this talk. We've seen presentations now about theory of wireless networking and then an implementation of a system. So this is a talk that's more toward the application. And the application is ecological research. So this is a little different talk than many of the talks you're going to see about agriculture. But the goal of what I'm going to talk about is to improve our understanding of the effects of climate change on plants and plant communities. And the motivation of that is that the evidence is growing that these systems are not going to be able to adapt quickly enough to survive climate change. And so this leads to the notion of what we're calling genetics-based ecological engineering. And this includes things like assisted migration or translocation. And since we're talking about here about natural ecosystems, we're talking about moving native plants. And this is somewhat controversial. But what I tell people is that we've been moving native plants around for a long time accidentally, and this kind of accidental engineering has consequences. And so we're trying to take these ideas and move to a more principled way of doing this. So I'm going to first talk a little bit about this idea of accidental engineering and then move into a description of what we're building, which is a system or cyber eco platform for ecological research. And the idea, again, is to be able to support long-term ecological experimentation so that we can build a scientific foundation for genetics-based ecological engineering. So to save time, I'm going to talk about the picture on your right. This is a mountain sign in northern Arizona, a pinyon juniper forest. And as you can see, in a number of regions in northern Arizona, we've had massive die-off of pinyon juniper forests due to extreme drought and heat. The interesting thing about that picture is maybe not all the dead trees you see, but there are a few ones that are still there. And it turns out the ecological researchers have found that genotype really matters. So even though all the trees are of the same species, some do much better than others. And so that leads to this notion of if we can understand what genes are responsible in what communities, maybe we do have a chance of actually designing ecological communities that will be robust to climate change. So what we need then are experimental facilities for large-scale genes by environment experiments where we can manipulate as many key processes as possible. And of course, in the Southwest, the number one thing is plant water availability. And from that, we'd like to enable development of models so that we can do prediction of the performance of plants and plant communities. So our system is called the Southwest Experimental Garden Array, or SEGA, and we're calling it a cyber ecosystem. It has 12 gardens across a climate gradient, and that climate gradient is caused by the elevation change we have in northern Arizona, and a lot of cyber infrastructure for both monitoring and manipulating environmental processes. So because we're supporting science, we want to support understanding of hypotheses or testing of hypotheses. I'm just going to talk about the fourth one and the sixth one here. But going back to that picture that you saw, this intraspecific genetic variation is, we think, a big deal because it will allow us to find genotypes within species that may be able to be adaptable to climate change. And in order to do that, we're talking about kind of common garden studies. And so, again, we are looking at 10 to 12 gardens in northern Arizona so we can identify superior genotypes. So here's the SEGA concept. And We have temperature on the x-axis and precipitation on the y-axis, so we move from warm and dry to cool and wet. Each one of these points represents a specific garden. And because we can do control of irrigation, we can move things upward. So we can develop gradients above where the gardens are. But also we can tease apart the difference between temperature and soil moisture using these light gray arrows. So we're looking at high resolution monitoring of key processes, again, in these 10, actually now 12 gardens of 5 hectares each, and passive manipulation of temperature by elevation, and active manipulation of precipitation or soil water content. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the systems engineering aspects of this system. We need real-time performance because we'd like to be able to turn watering on and off according to any number of different algorithms. All our activities have to be traceable. We need to understand what is happening out in these gardens. Some of them are very remote, a 5-hour drive away. We'd like to have it scalability in terms of the density of the nodes in each garden, the number of the gardens and the size of the gardens. We want flexibility. We'd like to be able to introduce new modes of sensing or actuation. And evolvability is very important because we're looking at a time scale of decades for this system, because it's going to take a long time, many years sometimes, to tease out a signal that tells us how our plants and plant communities are doing. And of course, we have limited budgets, so it should be economical. So our systems engineering approach is to map functions to single components as best we can, so that the functional and physical architecture of the systems are closely related. In terms of the control, what we have decided to do is that all the main control will happen back at a data center at the university. And that will allow us to understand exactly what's going on, as well as test algorithms. But the design also admits control at each garden site, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. So here's a block diagram, and it's not nearly as good as Mike's picture of their network, but it starts out with a sensor actuator node, and I'll talk a little bit more about what's inside each of those nodes. But these nodes form a self-organizing network, talk to a hub, which then, along with a standard NOAA climate station, talks with a Linux-based garden server. Each of these 12 gardens then communicates with the data center back at the university via either a cell modem or a satellite modem link. In some of our sites, cell service is not available, so we have to go with satellite. So, a little bit about the sensor actuator nodes. Our nodes are in polycarbonate boxes about this big. You can see a picture here of the circuit board of our main board or central processor board. Hang on a second. And we also have the ability to plug in up to 4 specialized satellite processor boards for any kind of sensing or actuation modality you can think of. And this is a little bit geeky here. I'm not going to go into details about this. This is more of an engineering thing, but we think we have a highly flexible system here that's also evolvable, so we can plug in new modules. I want to mention a little bit about some of the hardware, because we are moving now from the era of just gathering data using sensor networks to actually manipulating processes using sensor actuator networks. And in order to do that, you need to add to the capability of your sensor nodes. So for our plug-in satellite processor boards, one of the most important ones is controlling valve solenoids for irrigation. So to protect the system, sorry about this computer, we have actually a totally isolated high-power 12-volt bus, and the isolation is using optoelectrical isolators. All these nodes then talk to our hub, which then talks to the garden server, which is a Linux machine on site It's based on Debian Linux, and we've got Tomcat, which I'll talk about that, and some real-time streaming middleware called Data Turbine running on that. And we wanted to put a lot of capability out there because we wanted to be able to supply services to the researchers such as on-site Wi-Fi and remote security using a camera as well. Okay, so in terms of the challenges of what we're trying to do, what we'd like to be able to do is actually do state estimation of complex processes, particularly soil moisture, be able to do the sensing, inference, optimization, and control. And for the cyber system, we have to also be monitoring its performance because this needs to be working 24/7 for weeks, months, years, decades. Just a little bit, I'm going to talk very briefly about some of the things you can do to improve the efficiency of these systems. This is actually light data, and you can see that we're looking at under canopy and above canopy light. These variations are due to clouds. And by doing some fairly straightforward modeling that's different than your standard signal processing modeling, you can do extremely well. Here's the relative energy cost where 100% is sending all the data. So we start at 60%. Even the worst algorithms can do that. But better algorithms can push you down here in this area where you're looking at a very low energy cost and a very small error. So these are model-based algorithms for transmission of the data. I'm going to talk a little bit about the application in terms of how we understand what the soil moisture is and how it's controlled. So we have done some work on a previous NSF grant in which we're looking at trying to basically do model inference. And so we came up with a way of doing Bayesian inference that would take into account the dynamical state of the soil moisture at a particular point. You can see here we have field capacity, we have wilting point. These are nonlinear functions, so the actual dynamics are pretty complicated. This computer is driving me crazy. And so you can build a hierarchical model, and basically on the left here, we have our observations. Here's our process. And finally, here are the parameters. And the goal of this, of course, is to estimate the parameters of these models at each particular site. I told you we have 12 gardens, but half of them will be in volcanic soils or basaltic soils, and half will be in sedimentary or limestone soils. So the soils will differ from site to site. Here's an overall block diagram of the system. I want to talk about this very briefly. Here is our sensor actuator network. As I mentioned, it's a self-organizing, self-healing network. We use 900 megahertz radios to get better performance, particularly in environments where you have trees, which carry a lot of water. Here we have our hub for that sensor actuator network. These connect to our garden server as does the Campbell data logger for our centralized weather station for the system. The garden server runs RBNB, which is another name of Data Turbine, and talks over either a cell modem or a satellite modem to our real-time data center. From that point, we push things out for the user to see using open source tools, and we can also push things to a standard database management system. We've proven this using a closed loop testing. We have actually what we call benchtop SIGA in the laboratory to test our algorithms. And not only is it a platform for our use, but also we're going to set it up for training of operators of the system. Normally at this time I'd give you a demonstration. We actually have it running in real time and we have the ability to look at the data as it's streaming in real time. But I'm going to instead show you an overall diagram to kind of give you a sense of how this works. Here is a sensor node, and we have our central processor, and in this case we have a satellite processor which could measure soil moisture and operate a valve. It communicates through our sensor network to our garden server. And here's where we run this thing called RBNB, which I said is another way of calling this open source streaming middleware called Data Turbine. That pushes it all the way back to the real-time data center at the university. The key technologies we're using are both open source. The first is Data Turbine. I already mentioned that. But that's the glue or middleware that allows us to connect all our gardens to the real-time data center. And the second thing is Tomcat, which is Java-based web server technology. And this allows us to do a couple of things. First is everything can be done dynamically. So if you put a sensor out there that starts generating new information, the system will self-discover it. You don't have to tell it, go find that sensor and establish those channels. It will just find them and add them to the system. And the second thing is visualization. I won't be able to show you that today, but we have very rich visualization tools using standard things like Java server pages and servlet technology. And one of the interesting things that we've discovered is that in this space, you can learn a lot from other applications, particularly real-time finance. People that are tracking stocks in real-time use these same technologies. And they have a lot of money at stake, and they work really well. Okay, so I just want to mention a couple things about moving sort of forward with this. We have designed this to be scalable. We think that this type of facility should be replicated all over the world in different climate zones. I'm spending the year in Finland, actually, and that's where this came from. I gave a talk about Finland, but it's a very obviously very different climate than Arizona, but many of the same problems are occurring there. One of the things I'll just also briefly mention, this is for ecological research, but I, just being here at this conference, I've already learned a lot about the connections between agricultural applications and ecological applications. And I saw a talk this morning in which someone used the term agroecological systems. And so these interesting hybrid systems where you are looking at a hybrid between monocultural systems and the kind of systems that our researchers in ecology are using. So to conclude, we think that these cyber ecosystems will facilitate a new way of doing research. And we're essentially going from the observational research in ecology to experimental research, active research, so that where we can control things out in the field. And we think this will lead to a scientific foundation for genetics-based ecological engineering. We have a website. It's www.sega.neu.edu. And it's a specific application that combines, again, 12 garden sites with the cyber infrastructure to do this. And this is actually in development right now. And we are looking at better ways of handling really heterogeneous data sets, because we have a good understanding of how to manage the streaming data coming from all our sensors, but there's a lot of other data. So there can be satellite data that we'd like to pull in and fuse, genomic data, and a lot of work on phenotypic data from the plants out there. So thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer questions. Yes. So we actually designed that in my laboratory. We've been doing sensor networks since 2001, so it's a very mature, but basically a custom protocol for the ecological sensing application. Obviously, we want to transition this as much as possible in the future to commercially available and supported hardware, but at least for this initial run, it's going to be our own design.
Any other questions?
Sure.
Any potential favorite or candidate that you're looking at for that?
Not right now, but I really liked your talk because I wasn't aware that Digi International had some of those solutions that would fit perhaps very well. One of the things that's always a challenge for us is that because we're NSF supported, we want to make sure that our as much as possible what we develop is open source and available to other researchers. And so that is kind of an issue going forward in terms of the hardware and software design for this system.
Back there. I'm just wondering, so you're adding water to these sites, and I mean, how do you keep your tank of water from getting so hot that you're ending up putting a lot of heat energy into the root system as you are adding the water?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer, and I'll have to ask the ecologist. We have a separate team working on the irrigation system, and we're just working on turning the water on and off at the right time. But that's a really good point, because you could end up doing a warming experiment without wanting to. So thank you.
Time for one more. Thanks again.